Welcome to First on the Scene. I'm Jillian Crane, president of First Responders Children's Foundation.
And I'm Jody Burke, creative director of First Responders Children's Foundation.
Every day, we work with first responders and their families. In getting to know them, we realized they have incredible stories that have never been told. We wanted to know what kind of person chooses to risk their own life in service to absolute strangers. Who are they? What makes them tick? We call them everyday heroes. But let's face it, we don't really think about them until we need them. Like, for example, when there's a pandemic, which is how we met Gladys Mitchell.
Like a lot of times we get calls, we don't know the outcome. You take a call, boom, 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 do what you have to do, and that's it. You move on to the next one. The joy about it is when we get the calls of, please hurry, my wife is in labor. Okay, we're gonna get you the help, hurry, hold on, hold on. And then it's so nice, like when you're on the call with EMS, and then you hear the sound of a baby cry, and you're like, oh my God, I experienced birth.
As a 911 dispatcher, Gladys and her colleagues are that first voice we hear when something has gone very wrong. Since 1983, Gladys has spent her career dispatching help to the five boroughs of New York City. On September 11th, when the city needed her most, it was Gladys who took those first panicked calls in the dispatch center. She never could have imagined what would happen next.
9216K.
On September 11th, 2001, Gladys Mitchell's day started out just like any other day. She was up early, 5:30 a.m. Her husband and three daughters were still sleeping. Gladys wasn't scheduled to work, but she was excited because she'd been chosen to sing the national anthem at a formal ceremony given every year to honor 911 dispatchers, a play on the calendar date, 9/11. She was headed to Metrotech in Brooklyn, where the Central Dispatch is headquartered.
Every year on September 11th, we always had a ceremony. The police commissioner, the mayor, all the dignitaries would come and we would have a ceremony where they would present us with awards. I was not scheduled to work that day because I was chosen to sing the national anthem. That's my other profession. I am a performer. Every year they asked me, and every year I said, oh, not this year. But this particular year, they finally talked me into doing it. I got to work, and then one of the supervisors came to me and said, you know, Gladys, we're gonna have a lot of important people walking around. Why don't you just go take a call or something? You know, look busy. So I said, oh, okay, I'll go take a call or two. I sat down to take a call. And I got the very first call that came in that day. And it was a man, and he said to me, I'm a lawyer. I'm in a high-rise building. I don't want you to think I'm crazy, but I just saw a plane or a jetline hit the World Trade Center tower. Now, usually we're supposed to take everything at face value. We're not supposed to question. So when he said that to me, I started to say to myself, oh my goodness, I got a nutso on my hands. You know, that's what I thought at first. But then everything just started going crazy. Lights flashing. And then after I hung up from him, I got a call from a man who said that his wife was in the building, and he said, I'll give you $1 million if you please bring my wife home to me safely. And I just told him, your wife will come home to you safely, sir. We have units responding. Then the head principal came over to me and said, I need you right now. So I said, oh my goodness. So I just got up and I followed her, and she took me into the dispatching room and she said, "Gladys, handle this like I know you can." And I had no idea what I was getting ready to sit down to. I just put everything to the side and just did my job. I had to mobilize the entire World Trade Center. I had to send units into this place that was gonna take their life. And that's, see, that's what I live with every day. I know it's not my fault, but I say, you know, why me? Like, why did I survive? I'm still here when there are so many that are not here.
Moved by what we were hearing, Jody and I decided to feature Gladys in the premiere episode of this podcast.
Yes, the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
Okay, not the Manhattan Bridge.
No.
Why is
this,
that?
Is this Waze?
Yeah.
Because then that means the traffic is not bad.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Waze knows the way.
Okay. Oh, I tell you, Waze brought me to Manhattan through Queens.
We arranged for Gladys to go back to Metro Tech in Brooklyn for a tour of the newly renovated department.
It's going
to
be emotional, I think.
I've avoided going there because of, you know, the feeling.
She has not been back or seen any of her colleagues since she retired 13 years ago in 2008.
This is the entrance. Now, this was, none of this was here. None of this was barricaded or nothing. You just drove in.
The day would be a mix of heartfelt reunions and haunting memories.
You hit the call taker area first, and then you walk down to the dispatch area.
Mm-hmm. So you remember, Gladys, this is where we took our 911 calls. Our 911 calls used to be on the first floor here.
Right, yeah.
So now you see it's totally
different. And do the calls for all of New York City come in through here, or who's calling this number?
Well, the five boroughs, yes. Yeah. Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island. So
the dispatchers are mobilizing
The emergency response, right.
And that's what Gladys did.
Yeah. Gladys always had everyone's back. She even lobbied Congress to secure a better pension plan for her coworkers. Even though it had been 13 years since she left her job at Metro Tech, it seemed like there was an old friend around every corner.
I miss you, my little apple sauce.
I miss you too.
Teresa back there, another old tower.
Oh my gosh. Don't make me cry.
We were joined on our tour by Rayanne Singleton.
Right, we only dispatch police officers.
Right.
Yeah. Right. We make a telephone notification to the fire department, to the ambulance, right, to any other special unit that's needed outside, but we only dispatch police.
Gladys was quiet as Rayanne spoke. Being here was churning up so many memories. We sat down so she could catch up with her thoughts. And she shared with us her recollections from that fateful day 20 years ago.
I don't remember what was going on around me because I was so focused on what I was doing. It was so intense.
So you were dispatching police to different parts of Zone 1.
Right.
On 9/11. So you were sending them to the towers.
Right. I was doing the towers, you know, any calls that came in that area, stores, if they're residents, churches, schools. And just, you know, my thing is to think that I sent them into these buildings, you know? And a lot of them didn't make it up.
Gladys had never heard her dispatch calls from that day. Neither has anyone else, because they have never been released until now.
Okay, I'm being advised that we have numerous officers in that building in the basement at this time, trapped.
This is being advised. We have numerous MOSs stuck inside the building.
Get everybody out of there. This dog down, you can't see nothing.
9216, 10-5.
Everything is black.
everything is black since you can't see nothing right now.
You know, we were so busy trying to get the people out of the buildings. Mm-hmm. And then FD and PD, you know, they busy going in. Like, I wanted to tell them, don't go in there. I literally wanted to scream that. Don't go in there. Because nobody knew. I had no visual of what was going on. I could only go by what I heard.
Yeah, and you heard the other, I don't know, officer saying, get everyone out of there.
Right. Right. Only thing that I could do was to just repeat everything they say to make sure that whoever needed to hear that information got it. Because people were doing so many different things and didn't get a chance to hear it the first time.
Okay, 9216, you're in the building?
9216 is in the building. I can't see a thing. The door is locked. The door is locked.
You would hear that and then what would you do?
Right. You send people, you send units there. But everybody was there.
Yeah.
Everybody was there. My main focus was to really keep control of the air so that everybody wouldn't be screaming at the same time, because you can't get nothing done like that. So it was up to me to repeat the information so whoever needed to hear it, heard it. And then out in the field, if they needed to do a little mobilization, notify emergency service that we'll be over here. To hear them, like, just anxiousness, you know, in their voices. And me, like, trying to be forceful because I'm trying to get the information. I was just trying to get the information, but I knew that they were just so anxious of what was going on because they were visualizing all of this.
Even after all these years, Gladys still remembers a frantic call from that day. On the line was Moira Smith, trapped in Tower 2. She became the only woman NYPD officer to die that day. The call still haunts Gladys.
She asked me, what is that noise? I'm hearing the rumbling. And I was like, I don't know, because I didn't hear any rumbling. You know, because they tried to keep their radios off so that we wouldn't have so much cross, you know, talking.
So she's the police officer that was trapped in the South Tower?
Mm-hmm. What is that noise? And I was like, I don't know. Can somebody advise? What is, she's hearing a noise. What is that? And nobody would say nothing. And she asked again. And then I got a call. And they said, Central, the building is collapsing.
Which tower, King? Which tower?
Build a clock.
10-4. Okay, which tower, K? Which tower?
Tower 2.
That was something new for everybody. And even me, hearing that a plane hit and then another plane hit. But when they came to me and said, Gladys, notification, a plane just struck the Pentagon. I think for a minute there, I kind of like lost it. Like, are we at war here?
Gladys worked at dispatch from the start of her shift until 8:30 that night. Utterly exhausted and in complete shock, she needed to step away.
No more words would come out of my mouth. I could not speak anymore. I just could not speak.
Unable to go on, Gladys stepped outside to clear her head. She could not believe her eyes. The Brooklyn Bridge had been closed due to a bomb threat. And over the Manhattan Bridge, a caravan of walking wounded, covered in thick white ash,
were trying to make their way to safety.
When I got outside, I saw people coming across the bridge, all covered up. And I was like, what in the world is that? What happened? And to see all these people walking, blood all over them. So I walked across the bridge to One Police Plaza because I said, they're going to need help over there. And then I saw from the bridge all the smoke. It looked like a war zone. Like a war zone. I got to One Police Plaza. It was like chaos. Because, you know, we were at the rescue point at that point. So when I got to One Police Plaza, oh my goodness, the sorrow, that's the only way I can describe it, you know? It was just so much sorrow going on. To this day, it still affects me.
When Gladys returned to the call center a couple of hours later, the place was in turmoil.
It was crazy. It was chaotic. We was dealing with all kinds of stuff. It wasn't just the World Trade Center. The people that are sick, that's calling for ambulances. You had women that were going into labor.
Right.
You had robberies going on.
The communication center had become so overwhelmed that dispatchers had to resort to pencil and paper.
They would have to write down the information on slips because the system was so messed up. It was going down, coming back up, going down, coming back up.
At 2 a.m., after working nearly 19 hours straight, Gladys headed home, traumatized and exhausted.
And that was because I got a ride home. And to this day, I don't even remember who drove me home. I don't even remember.
During our tour of MetroTech, we stopped and interviewed three other dispatchers who worked on September 11th. Rayanne Singleton, who we met at the beginning of the podcast, Monique Brown, and Natalie Wilson, each with nearly 30 years of 911 experience.
These three ladies worked on 9/11 also.
Do you know each other?
It's so good to see you. Ooh, thank you.
And this is Monique Brown.
Monique Brown. I am a dispatcher for NYPD 911, and I've been a dispatcher for 32 years.
My name is Rayanne Singleton. I'm a supervisor at 9/11, and I've been working for communications for 30 years.
Hi, my name is Natalie Wilson. I've been on the job for 28 years working for 911.
Natalie told us about the challenges of the job.
When they call 911, everyone's life is in danger. You never know what's going on. Sometimes one simple problem can escalate into a major situation. Say like there's a family fight and there's a weapon involved. You must keep your cool because if you get upset, you cannot help the person who's in need. And you have to maintain that composure in order to focus to get that person help.
But something had bothered Gladys, Monique, and their fellow dispatchers for years.
We are the lifeline. They don't focus us as being first responders, which I think is very wrong. We are first responders. The mayor doesn't acknowledge it. The governor don't acknowledge it. Because when you call 911 to get help, you either call for an ambulance, you call for a fire department, or you call for the police. We're very important. All we want is just the respect of acknowledging us.
We didn't know that the state of New York does not define 911 dispatchers as first responders. We were stunned to learn that they are considered clerical workers. However, First Responders Children's Foundation recognizes the enormous stress, courage, and skill it takes to go from emergency to emergency, day in and day out. As far as we're concerned, they are the first of the first responders on the scene.
And when I seen 536 calls holding, I knew right off back something was going outside. And I went into the radio room because I was also a citywide dispatcher. And it was just, I can remember everybody I spoke to that day. And it's just, you know, the names and who you helped and who you worked with for that day. You remember all of that. And during this time of the year, it always comes back and you get emotional because you know what that day felt like. You know, we did this for a long time, but that particular day, it still just gives me chills. It brings tears to my eyes till this day.
The most painful memories are about those they couldn't help. They all remember Moira Smith. The officer speaking with dispatch was trapped in the basement when Tower 2 fell.
The female officer, the only female officer of NYPD that passed away, Moira Smith, we talked to her last. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked to her last. Like,
she was
talking to one of the other dispatchers. He's retired. She was talking to him, and she was like, you know, we couldn't get her out because we didn't know where she was, or she didn't know where she was. And really, there was no way to get anybody out. And so we just talked to her. He just talked to everybody was standing around him. The radio room was so quiet.
Silence.
We talked to her so she didn't talk no more.
Yeah.
And how did they deal with their own trauma? They found strength in each other.
At that time, my son was 8 months old. So I had postpartum depression going on, and I had 9/11 going on.
Yeah.
So I was crazy for the next 6 months.
Yeah, it was a lot.
But,
it was a lot.
We helped each other. Thank God for my coworkers that was always on the phone. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Are you coming in? Do you need us?
Well, something else that helps me with dealing with 9/11 and just made my faith a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Praying a little more.
Yeah, right.
We started a prayer group.
We started a prayer group. I mean, that helped me tremendously. You know, even now, still today, before I walk in any building, I just have to put my armor on and ask God, you know, give me the strength to help the next person. Give me that empathy that I need, that sympathy for that person.
The days following the attack on the World Trade Center were some of the toughest in Gladys's life.
I didn't know where I was going to be from day to day. Sometimes my girls would come down to meet me because I was working 12, 14 hours a day every day to the point where we were exhausted. I mean, exhausted. It was like I came home for like 3 hours, 4 hours, and I was right back again.
Right on the heels of the attacks, Gladys's husband asked for a divorce.
After September 11, that very next month, he decided he didn't want to be married anymore after 16 years. Total abandonment of me and the girls, because he said he felt that after September 11, you know, life was short. He wanted to experience, as he said, living on his own.
Wow.
The divorce was hard on Gladys's daughters as well.
Tracy was turning 16, and I had planned a huge sweet 16 for her. Everything was set and ready to go. But after September 11 and after her dad left, I had to cancel the whole thing because she didn't want to do it. She said, her words were, there is nothing to celebrate.
Mm.
I was heartbroken, and I was determined that that situation not break them.
In the years that followed, Gladys was determined that her family would not fall apart.
I guess I just went on autopilot, you know, and I guess that was the best thing to do in hindsight when I think back. It affected me eventually because I had a massive heart attack.
Oh, my God.
In 2008. You know, so I guess I did internalize it afterwards.
Sharing her story has helped her process some of her grief. Gladys looked at her life and decided what was important to her.
Healing for me in a lot of ways means like to begin to live my best life now, you know? I thought I was kind of living a good life, and I was, but now I can really start to
be more purposeful in my life. This is not an ending chapter. I want to venture out and I want to pursue my singing career, which, you know, it seems to be like picking up. That's my first love.
Two weeks after our tour of Metrotech, things came full circle. On the morning of 9/11/2021, we were invited to accompany Gladys to CNN's New Day with anchor Christy Paul. We would no longer be able to call Gladys our unseen hero.
So we're marking together here 20 years since the horrific events of September 11th, and there's a new podcast.
We are the lifeline to the city. We are truly the first responders. And what I would like people to know is that we are always here for you. When you have an emergency, you call 911.
We were sitting with Gladys in the CNN green room after the interview when we received some amazing news. News that would bring some much needed closure to Gladys, Rayanne, Monique, Natalie, and everyone who wears the uniform of a 911 dispatcher. New York Governor Kathy Hochul had just signed into law legislation S7121A, a long overdue bill designating 911 operators and dispatchers as first responders for the first time. This meant that emergency dispatchers and communications personnel who keep us safe 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, will receive the support and benefits they deserve. I comforted Gladys as she was overcome with emotion.
Friends have I lost? How many dark nights have I known? Walking down that wrong road, there was so many things.
Wait, I just don't really remember all the
words. That was amazing. That was amazing. That was amazing. Oh, I so love that.
Beautiful. I don't know how you just sang that.
That's my favorite song. I am changing.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers. Can always find people who are helping. Thank you to all the first responders who put their lives in danger to help us when my brothers and sisters need them. We look out for the helpers because they look out for us.
Thank you, first responders!
Thank you, first responders!
Learn how you can help first responders by texting BRAVE to 24365.
Thank you for listening to First on the Scene. We look forward to introducing you to more heroes like Gladys Mitchell.
If you're interested in sponsoring an episode, please write us at info@firstrcf.org. That is the number one, strcf.org. And if you'd like to hear more about First Responders Children's Foundation, please visit our website at firstrcf.org. Remember, that's the number one, strcf.org. Tune into our next episode wherever you get your podcasts. Stay safe, everyone.